الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله.
أنا عدي بن حاتم الطائي، أبايع باسم الطائيين علي بن أبي طالب أميرا للمؤمنين على كتاب الله وسنة رسوله.
وأنا هانئ بن عروة المرادي باسم المراديين، أبايع علي بن أبي طالب أميرا للمؤمنين على كتاب الله وسنة رسوله.
Personally speaking, I'm averse to clashing with anyone who genuinely advocates for the primacy of the Sunnah and the consensus of the Sahaba. I'd much rather spare my arrows for those who brazenly and unashamedly promote a version of Islam which follows other than the path of the believers, the companions, those who do not even pretend to follow them in excellence. But if we contradict the orthodoxy we claim to represent, our errors should be called out and corrected. That's part of the game. Mess up in public, hope someone will notice, and show you where you need to clean up. One issue over which the citizens of Saibistan have made a great big mess is khuruj. Linguistically, khuruj literally means going out, exiting. In a general shar'i sense, it means to revolt, to rebel, to rise up against the state by word or deed. Technically, istilahan, khuruj is to undermine or renounce one's sworn allegiance to one's sovereign authority. A failure to grasp the distinctions between these definitions is one of the factors that has led to much of the mess Muslim YouTubers have made in the minds of their audience on the issue. That, and what we will address in this series, inshallah, is balance, or lack thereof, a disregard for context and consequence, a violation of Islamic principles when broaching the topic, and a total misreading of the fascinating history of the formative first century of Islam. And in addressing this topic in a manner which should make it more meaningful for the viewer, we will routinely respond to what others have already put out there. So with that being said, consider this Girgir from the Gaji, who calls himself Bro Haji.
When the ulama were writing, the classical ulama in the past, when they were writing about the system of governance, about rulers, wulat al-umur, sultan, al-umara, wuzara, etc., they were referring in the context of a khilafah, okay? They weren't referring to any other system of governance apart from a khilafah.
Today's Muslim-majority states and nominal Muslim rulers are a far cry from even the most diminished of the Islamic states of the past. This is true, but it's also irrelevant. The guidance with which Allah sent His Messenger Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam was and is for the betterment and salvation of mankind for all time till the end of time. If today's ummah is afflicted with the misrule of mischievous despots, then the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam has already informed us about them and taught us how to deal or not deal with them through numerous hadith.
Do these hadiths, okay, apply to a ruler, a Muslim ruler that applies the capitalist system of governance? Does it apply to the ruler that applies a Marxist system of governance? Does it apply to the ruler that applies a communist system of governance, etc., etc., or the secularist or the secularism system of governance? I'm just asking, does it apply to them?
This is a good question, and it returns to the questioner. If the ahadith relating to the rights and responsibilities of the ruler and the ruled become void outside of a khilafah, as is being intimated, then this would mean the Prophet's prescriptions on sovereignty became redundant a mere 30 years after his passing, because that's when the sunnah restricted definition of the khilafah ended. Allah's Messenger sallallahu alaihi wasallam foretold, "There will be prophethood amongst you for as long as Allah wills, then Allah will raise it when He wills to raise it. Then there will be khilafah, caliphate, upon the methodology of prophethood, and it will remain amongst you as long as Allah wills it to remain, and He will raise it when He wills to raise it. Then there will be a biting dominion amongst you for as long as Allah wills it to be, and then He will raise it when He wills to raise it. Then there will be tyrannical dominion among you, and it will remain with you as long as Allah wills it to remain, then He will raise it when He wills to raise it. Then there will return the khilafah upon the methodology of the prophets." Note in this prophecy how Allah's Messenger characterized the epochs of Muslim rule as ad, vicious and biting, and jabbariya, tyrannical and oppressive. Despotism then becomes the default state of affairs during the intercaliphal period, a period that characteristically strays from the teachings of Islam to a greater or lesser extent. Despotism, like your
secularism,
is an ism, is it not? And if we move to a wider linguistic definition, so that Khilafah becomes a synonym for all Muslim polities unconditionally praised by the Prophet, then we add only a couple of decades to include Muawiyah's reign, which was a kingship of mercy, as evidenced in his sallallahu alayhi wasallam saying, "The first of this affair, meaning Islam, will be prophethood and mercy. Then there will be caliphate and mercy. Then there will be kingship and mercy."
So what we're saying is, the general ruling, okay, or the general understanding of the scholars, was that when they were mentioning all of these things, they were referring it in the context of a khilafah. Okay, they were referring to it in a context of a khilafah. That was the system of governance at the time. Now we've got 58 nation states, okay, 58 nation states, and you're applying these ahadith and these prophetic ahadiths on rulers who implement system of governance which is un-Islamic. Obviously, Marxist, capitalist, etc., etc.
Well, after Muawiyah's reign, we had dynastic succession, a foreign body syncretized onto Islamic praxis. Qaisariya, Caesarism, as the companion and son of the great companion Abu Bakr called it. Caesarism, like your
Marxist capitalist
systems, is an ism, is it not? Furthermore, if the desire is to return to the pure sunnah in imama, wilaya and hakimiyya, in leadership, governorship and legislative rule, then the means toward that political revival must also be in accordance with the pure sunnah. As the sunnah clearly explains, Khilafah will return upon that prophetic methodology which ushered it in the first instance. Therefore, we can say categorically that the Khilafah will not return through khuruj or political violence, because it was never established through violence in the first place. A transition of power that is peaceful and popular is the only mechanism of advancing from one Muslim sovereign to the next, which is 100% in accordance with the Sunnah and the divinely inspired texts. Something that looks like this.
أنا زبير بن العوام القرشي الأسدي أبايع علي بن أبي طالب أميرا للمؤمنين على كتاب الله وسنة رسوله.
أنا طلحة بن عبيد الله القرشي التيمي أبايع علي بن أبي طالب أميرا للمؤمنين على كتاب الله وسنة رسوله.
أنا عبد الله بن عمر بن الخطاب القرشي أبايع علي بن أبي طالب أميرا للمؤمنين على كتاب الله وسنة رسوله.
Recognizing how far we have strayed from the ideals suggested in such scenes doesn't mean that we don't aspire for them, or that we are pleased with the ruler's abuse of power should he sideline divine law without valid reason. We're simply recognizing the power dynamic between the ruler and the ruled being overwhelmingly in favor of the former. Besides, we have conviction in Allah's divine justice, whether we see it in this life or the next. He, Allah, will call to account the imam, the leader, slacking on the job and reneging on his pastoral obligations, much less his treachery to the deen, precisely because Allah alone has uncontested power and sovereignty over the tyrannical sovereigns in the earth. The companion, Hudhayfa bin al-Yaman, said, "There will be leaders who will punish you, and Allah will punish them." And as Allah's Messenger sallallahu alayhi wasallam said, "There is no servant whom Allah has placed in authority over the people's affairs, and he does not deal with them sincerely, except that he will be denied even the scent of paradise." So whosoever does good equal to the weight of a seed shall see it, and whosoever does evil equal to the weight of a seed shall see it. Here the Quran speaks of the harvest of the hereafter, when we will inevitably reap what we sow of good and evil seeds. But we also have a duty of enjoining that good and forbidding evil.
وَلْتَكُمْ وأولئك هم المفلحون.
Let there arise from you a people enjoining good and forbidding evil, and it is they who are successful. Remember the hadith Sleepy Joe cited?
Whomever among you sees a wrong, let him change it with his hand. If he is not able, then with his tongue. If he is not able, then with his heart.
And that is the weakest of faith. We've another hadith in the same genre where Allah's Messenger sallallahu alayhi wasallam said, "Never was a prophet sent by Allah to a nation before me except that he had from his people disciples and companions who followed his sunnah and obeyed his command. Then came after them their successors who said what they didn't practice and practiced what they hadn't been commanded. فَمَنْ جَاهَدُهُمْ. So whoever strives against them, makes jihad against them with his hand is a believer. And whoever strives against them with his tongue is a believer. And whoever strives against them, makes jihad against them with his heart is a believer. And beyond that, there is not even a mustard seed's worth of faith." Forbidding evil by the hand, changing it, making jihad against it, means physically, by force. And this is generally understood to be the remit of the state. As the late 16th century Ottoman scholar of hadith, the muhaddith Mulla Ali al-Qari transmitted, "This is what some of our scholars have said. The first order of changing evil by the hand is for the leaders. The second, to change by the tongue, is for the scholars. And the third, to hate in one's heart, is for the generality of the believers." But what if that state is the evil? Should not then the people revolt, that is, make khuruj against the Muslim authority? Does not khuruj against oppressive rule fall under the rubric of forbidding evil? Actually, Muslims who call for khuruj validate Islam-hating apostates in their errant reading of the inspired texts, when they similarly misinterpret them as vigilante calls to action.
If you see something wrong, and he quotes the Prophet Muhammad, then use your hand, and if you can't use your hand, use your tongue, and if you can't use your tongue, then use your heart. What he's basically doing from that point onwards is enforcing Sharia law, and it is vigilantism on steroids.
Attempting to exact vigilante justice against the state invariably increases the evil in society, as counterinsurgency measures kick in and people suffer brutal reprisals from the state's security apparatus, unless said security forces are the ones modifying the ruler's oppression, potentially implementing regime change in the event the ruler refuses to rescind from his own rebellion against the religion. And here, we are speaking of the Ahlul Halli wal Aqd, the people of power and influence. Depending on a ruler's willingness to subject himself to the legal mechanisms of the state and the coercive assets at the Ahlul Halli wal Aqd's disposal, should said ruler resist, then we have a way of changing the evil of the ruler with the hand that should mitigate against a descent into anarchy and an escalation of evil. Historically, some Muslim dynasties had such a setup in place, where a quasi-independent judiciary would work in tandem with the army to keep rambunctious rulers in check. At least in theory. In practice, where an unfit ruler could rely on the support of the army more than could the rest of the Ahlul Halli wal Aqd, then he would
strike down upon thee with great vengeance and furious anger those who attempt to
depose that ruler. And should the Ahlul Halli wal Aqd refuse to halt the ruler's evil whilst having the requisite ability to do so, but instead willingly support him in his sin, then they are complicit in his crimes and enablers of his evil, and there are grave consequences beyond the grave for aiding the tyrant in his tyranny. "After me there will be rulers," the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said. "Whoever believes in their lies and helps them in their wrongdoing is not of me, and I am not of him, and he shall not come to me at the pool. Whoever does not believe in their lies and does not help them in their wrongdoing, he is of me, and I am of him, and he shall come to me at the pool." At the risk of jumping the gun somewhat by presenting our report recommendations a bit early, this Qayyim and Jawziyyan wisdom neatly summarizes our position against insurrection. Whoever contemplates the major and minor crises, the fitan which have occurred in Islamic history, will see that this basis has been totally overlooked. There has been a lack of patience with evil, and thus means have been sought to remove it, which unfortunately led to greater evil. In Makkah, Allah's Messenger sallallahu alaihi wasallam witnessed immense evils, yet he was unable to change them. Even when Makkah was conquered and became an abode of Islam, he wanted to return the house to the original foundations of Ibrahim alayhi salam. Yet he did not do that, despite his ability to do so, as he feared the emergence of something worse, in that the Quraysh would not have been able to accept that, as they had just embraced Islam, and only recently left unbelief. For this reason, it is not permitted to forbid the evil of the leader via the hand, due to the greater evils which this brings about. Should the Ahlul Halli wal Aqd feel unable to halt by the hand the evil of the ruler, then it is incumbent upon them, especially the scholars amongst them, to at least speak against his evil. As the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, the best jihad is to speak a word of truth to the tyrannical authority. That's how you speak truth to power according to the sunnah, directly to its face, not by huffing and puffing thousands of miles away or from behind a keyboard. That's not jihad. It's not even brave. It may even beget buffoonery and elicit irresponsibility when it risks adding fuel to the fire, poking the bear, or whatever other metaphor one can think up. For in his fiery rage, when he feels his authority has been challenged, the proud despot will often double down in his despotism and lash out against whichever poor sods happen to be in the line of fire.
وَاتَّقُوا فِتْنَةً لَا تُصِيبَنَّ الَّذِينَ ظَلَمُوا مِنْكُمْ خَاصَّةً وَاعْلَمُوا أَنَّ اللَّهَ شَدِيدُ الْعِقَابِ.
And beware the affliction which affects not exclusively those of you who do wrong, and know that Allah is severe in punishment. As for when the scholars and those who are in a position to advise the despot don't, and worse, they instead flatter him, justify for him his tyranny and fisk, thereby misleading him and the masses, then they are worse than silent devils. So who's left? We, the common people, the plebs and the peasants. And upon us is to detest within our hearts the evil we cannot reduce. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, the best of your rulers are those whom you love and who love you, who invoke God's blessings upon you, and you invoke His blessings upon them. And the worst of your rulers are those whom you hate and who hate you, and whom you curse and who curse you. The companions asked, should we not overthrow them by the sword? The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam replied, no, as long as they establish prayer among you. Then should you find detestable anything from their administration, then hate their actions, but do not withdraw yourselves from their obedience. Note how the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam specifically enjoined hating the evil of rulers while simultaneously forbidding rising up against them. وَذَلِكَ عَدَفُ الْإِيمَانِ. And that is the weakest of faith. Why? Because the hate that is confined to one's heart doesn't carry with it the risk to one's person, as when admonishing the ruler face to face. It doesn't come with the life-threatening repercussions of attempting to depose him physically whilst he is armed and guarded in his fortified palace. But it is still iman, it is still jihad against evil, according to the speech of Allah's Messenger sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And if someone wants to call it quietism, they may do so, but they may not call it cowardice, because jihad, even if confined to the heart, is the opposite of cowardice. Cowardice and her wicked stepsister, nifaq, hypocrisy, are characteristic of he who is indifferent or secretly pleased with tyranny, dhulm and fisq. Whoever dies without partaking in a military expedition, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, or even desiring to do so, dies upon a branch of hypocrisy. That's the one who doesn't desire combat for the sake of Allah. How worse the hypocrisy of the one who refuses to even hate for the sake of Allah. In the end, Allah will see his religion ascendant regardless of the prevailing political state of the Muslim world. His religion will continue to advance and remain straight, regardless of how crooked and tyrannical those claiming to represent his servants may be. This matter will not cease to remain straight, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, until the hour is established. What is incumbent upon us is to face any and every situation with steadfastness upon the truth according to the Sunnah of the Beloved Messenger, as it is through the example and instruction of Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wasallam, the leader and teacher of all mankind, wherewith guidance is obtained and an everlasting victory is gained.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.